In our Demystified series, exploring the wide world of Torah from A to Z. Tonight, we are going to talk about animals. This is actually a very exciting topic that I have been personally looking forward to because of the fact that I've always been somewhat fascinated by animals. I do not consider myself in any way whatsoever to be an expert authority on anything having to do with animals. So I would ask that if there's anything that I say about animals that doesn't sound right, please fact check me. But certainly, since I was a little kid, I had a fascination, perhaps as many kids do, but I haven't really lost that interest. A very, very natural curiosity about nature in general, animals in particular. And so therefore, having an opportunity to go ahead and sort of survey some of the primary sources that we find within Torah and Chazal regarding animals was something that that was particularly interesting, meaningful, and delightful for me. So what we're going to do tonight, as we've been doing so far since we began this series, is trying to focus on different different areas, different perspectives, and try to offer as much of an overview as we can when it comes to animals. So I would like to begin tonight by talking about animals in the Torah. What I mean by this is not animals from a Torah perspective, but specifically animals in the Torah. Where in the Torah do we find animals? Now, I imagine you don't have to think long and hard to come up with an answer to that question, but you may be surprised if you really stop and think about, well, let's say if I start from the beginning of Chumash, and I'm going to start with Parshas Bereishis, well, that's easy. Because, of course, we know that Parshas Bereishis begins with the story of creation, and, of course, that includes major descriptions about animals, all the different types of animals and birds and fish, and mammals and reptiles, etc. But when we proceed in Sefer Bereishis, we go on to the next day, Parshas Noach, of course, animals play a very important role in Parshas Noach as well. And this continues throughout Sefer Bereishis, with no exception whatsoever. In Parshas Lech Lecha, and here I'm just sharing lots of interesting, these are not actual photos, but biblical illustrations, you know, highlighting certain key moments in biblical history, but particularly in Sefer Bereishis, and you can see, and hopefully these are bringing up memories for you, that literally in every parsha, Bereishis, Noach, Lech Lecha, Vayerech, Hayisara, Todos, Vayetze, Vayishlach, Vayeshev, Miketz, Vayigash, and Vayechi, we find that animals play either a central role or at the very least somewhat of a peripheral role. But we find that animals are always there, all different types of animals. And this is a major, major part of Torah. And it's really fascinating when you stop for a moment and say, okay, so where can I find parshios that don't refer to or talk about animals? And when you continue, and I'm not going to provide pictures for Chamisha Chumshei Torah, but when you just think about Sefer Shemos, which we just started, and Sefer Shemosh was talks, of course, about Yetzias Mitzrayim, which includes, of course, the preparation for the leaving of Egypt, which of course, features the Korban Pesach. And in this week's Parsha, Parsha's Yisro, we're going to be reading about the role of animals in terms of Maimon Har Sinai and where they were, can and can't go. Of course, Parsha Mishpatim we're going to read next week, which talks all about various laws having to do with animals, the ownership of animals. And of course, as we proceed and talk about Hakamas HaMishkan, the building of the Mishkan, both in terms of the materials and, of course, the central purpose of the Mishkan, namely to be a place of karbanos, well into Sefer Vayikra, Binbo, and Devarim, and beyond, there are many, many, many parshios and mitzvos as well that reference or focus around animals. I couldn't find, and I did, frankly, forgive me, I didn't decide to take the time to actually go through the Taryag mitzvos and see how many, but I'm sure it's hundreds of mitzvos that relate to, in some way whatsoever, animals. Here you have just an illustration of the Shisha Sidre Mishnah. I'm not going to read through them all right now, but if you can see it on your screen, just to quickly scan through, some of the Masechtos quite obviously feature, and again, in a very, very prominent way, animals. And other ones, perhaps while it may not be the main feature, their Mishnah is in every one of the Shisha Sidre Mishnah and every one of the Masechtos of Shas that deal with animals. And the same is true when it comes to our study of Shulchan Aruch. All the four halakim of Shulchan Aruch feature halachos, some of them more practical than others, that have to do with animals. And so really, it behooves us to begin this conversation by recognizing that the discussion of animals is not merely some sort of random, very irrelevant, off to the side topic, which hardly ever appears or is featured in Torah. Quite to the contrary, we find that there are countless references to animals throughout Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh. Now, I would like to begin our discussion tonight by highlighting an important thing, which I imagine should be obvious to most of us, maybe all of us, but I want to say it anyway, and that is that animals are not people. I can make a joke that some people are animals, but I won't say that. But animals are not people. And the reason this is important is because we're going to be talking for the next 45 minutes or so about animals and how important they are and how much concern and sensitivity we have to have for animals and the significance of animals and the role that they play in our lives. And so therefore, I want to make it very, very clear from the outset that while we are featuring animals tonight, we shouldn't think for a moment that animals have in any way whatsoever a status which equivalent to that of people. 7 weeks ago, you may recall, if you were with me at the time, that we spoke about sort of the four levels within creation, the concept of domein, tzomeach, chayim, medaber, that there are four levels. And we spoke at the time, I think we were talking about shoes and how man demonstrates his dominion over all of nature by dominating the different levels below. And so therefore, there is a clear demarcation in terms of the way that we understand the layers, the levels, if you will, within the natural world. There's a clear demarcation between man and animals. This is something which is clear in the Psukim themselves. At the very, very beginning of Sefer Bereishis, the Torah tells us, Vayitzer Hashem Elokim es Adam afri min adama. Man was created from the earth, from the dust of the earth. Vayipach bi'apav nishmas chayim, that God breathed, so to speak, into the nostrils of man a living soul. Vayi Adam lenefesh chaya. And man becomes a nefesh chaya. The Targum Unkelis famously comments, what does that mean? Ubara Hashem Elokim yas Adam afram in ara. God creates again man, thus from the earth. V'nafach bi'apoi nishmasa d'chaye v'havas ba'adam luruach mamalala. Man becomes a speaking being. One of the ways that we refer to man is a medaber. And Rashi actually makes this point as well. Even a behema, says Rashi, behema chaya are called nefesh, nefesh chaya. However, achzu shel Adam chaya shebekulan. That man is on a higher level, shenitosif badeyov adibor, because man has a higher level of intellect. In addition, and I would say which reflects itself, manifests itself through the power of speech. Of course, animals can communicate one with another, but the level of communication, the level of sophistication between the way we can communicate one with another, to develop different languages and to build civilizations over the course of time, adding layers and levels to our knowledge. So this is something which is unique to mankind. The Pasuk also tells us, also back in the very beginning of Sefer Bereishis, Vayivar Elokim Esa Adam Betzalmo, Betzalem Elokim Baroso, Zachar Unakeva Baroso. The concept that man is created as a Tzalem Elokim. Of course, there is much that we can discuss about what that means. That could be a shiur in of itself. What is Tzalem Elokim? But whatever Tzalem Elokim means, we'll translate it literally, even though it's not to be understood literally, the image of God, this is a description of man, not animals. So just to highlight a few, and this is not supposed to be a complete exhaustive list, some of the important distinctions between animal and man. The concept that man has a neshama is unique to human beings. Animals have a nefesh. Animals clearly are alive. So I don't know that there's necessarily a perfect way to translate the difference between a neshama and nefesh in English. But if nefesh represents sort of a life on a very, very basic, a soul rather, on a very, very basic level, description of life, neshama reflects something which is much greater, something which Chazal sometimes referred to as a chelek alo kamimal, a portion, so to speak, of the divine itself. The concept is mentioned with Tzelo Elokim. Bechira chavshis. Now again, here I may be out of my league. I can't really say for sure that animals never make choices, but certainly the ability that we have to choose between tov and ra, between right and wrong, man's ability to develop a sense of morality and to relate to that and to think not only in terms of what's best for you at the moment, but to understand and to appreciate the concepts of delayed gratification and to think about the importance of ethics. So this is all unique to human beings, and this is not a feature of the animal kingdom. Schaiva onesh, it's for that reason why we are held accountable. The whole concept of reward and punishment is unique to human beings. And of course, Olam Haba. Olam Haba is the concept of the eternity of a soul. And actually, I think one of the other shiurim that we have coming up in the weeks ahead is to talk about what Olam Haba is. But the concept of Olam Haba is something which is unique to humankind. This is not something which relates to animals. One more very interesting Mar Malkam before we go on to the next section, Rav Schwab on prayer, which is one of my favorite Svarim on Siddur. It is based on the teachings, the Shiurim of Rav Shimon Schwab. So he talks over here about a bracha that we make every morning. The bracha in the first of the brachas, Hashachah Asher Nasana Sachvivi Na'ala Avchim Ben Yom Avein Laila. And he talks about the fact that the word Sechvi is understood by Rashi and Tosfos as a rooster. In Arabic, a rooster is called Sechvi. He quotes the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. And so therefore, Hanosein Lasechvi Vina Lavchin Ben Yom Avein Laila, he's talking about the Bina, which is derived from Bein, which means to distinguish between different things, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu embeds within the rooster the innate understanding, the ability to discern between the darkness of night and that of the impending daybreak, which is why he announces to each and every one of us, it's time to wake up in the morning. So the rooster is, of course, the world's natural alarm clock. And so therefore, you can say on a most simple level, we make this bracha in the morning, highlighting the fact that the rooster reminds us or informs us, pronounces when we should wake up in the morning. However, Rav Schwab goes on to point out that according to the students of Rabbeinu Yonah, and followed by the Rush, the word Sechvi has an additional meaning, and that of seeing or insight. And this is talking specifically about human beings. The bracha would then refer to the ability of the human being or the human heart to distinguish between day and night. So combining both meanings, this bracha gives thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the cognitive power of the rooster, which in turn makes our heart aware of the impending break of dawn. And I thought this was not just an interesting source, but really we could appreciate sort of the nexus, if you will, between the animal kingdom and the human kingdom, that we are related in some ways, that we have, of course, we share, you know, many parts of our DNA are shared. There are, of course, many important advancements in medical science. We're able to achieve them because of our understanding of the physiological anatomy of animals. So, of course, there's a lot of overlap, but of course, it doesn't stop there. And there's a very, very big difference when we talk about the life of a human being and the life of an animal. And one should never, ever confuse those two things. So for those of us, myself included, who like animals, who find them to be fascinating and maybe can even appreciate being in the company of an animal, we should never, ever for a moment forget that animals are animals and people are people. Now let's talk about appreciating of animals. And I don't mean right now the importance of appreciating and saying please and thank you to your animals, but appreciating from the perspective of the tremendous chachma, the brilliance that we find within creation. The Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah that you see in front of you tells us that even things that we see that we think have no purpose in the world, no significance whatsoever, kagon, zvuvin, parushin, biyutushin, flies and fleas and other bugs, small things. And of course, there are probably millions of different types of species of insects. Hakol b'chla b'riyaso shel olam hein. These are all part of the b'riya. U'b'kol HaKadosh Baruch Hu osa shlichu osa. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu carries out a shlichus through each and every one of them. And then the Medrash goes on to mention specifically a nachash, a yatush, a tzvardeya. And all of these, of course, are references to moments in our history, either biblical history or we know through Torah Shabbat Peh. But the idea over here is that everything has a place within creation. And there are literally, there are millions of different types of animals and species and insects. And one can spend an entire lifetime studying and not, I'm going to say not yet scratch the surface, but of course there are so many things that we have yet to discover. There are species deep in the ocean that we have no way of even discovering yet. And each and every one of these, say Chazal, are part of the Bria by design and are intended to convey a certain message, Bechlal u'Bifrat. It's perhaps for this reason why Poskim have, they've debated, but for the most part, it hasn't been much of a debate, have discussed the value of going to a zoo to look at animals and to observe them and to learn about them. Over here you have an excerpt from the Tshuvas Yechav Adas, Chelek Gimel Siman Samach Vav, Rav Avadya Yosef, Zichrono Livracha, talks about the question as to whether or not it's permissible to go to a zoo. And he writes, Nir Shadava Barur Lahatil Lelechas Lagana Chayos. It is certainly permissible, absolutely, Lehistagel B'Riyosav Shalakadosh Baruch Hu, to gaze, to look at the Bria of Hashem, ki nafsho shel adam mispa'elas ma'od meriyaso masa yadav shel abore. This is something that inspires a person. We can become excited about this, as the pasuk says, ma'rabu masecha Hashem. And he goes on to quote from the Sefer Lekei Yosha that says that the Baal Teshuva Sadeshin once walked a very long way on Shabbos in order to see a pair of lions that were brought. That was probably some sort of traveling circus or something like that. And the Chida, it says over here that he was once in London and he visited the zoo in order to see these animals, and he was writing about them, particularly some very old bird. And he goes on to say that the same is true regarding kama gedolim chikrei lev chasidim vachimasa shebikur b'chanach hayos ve'ein potzepan. Nobody should ever suggest, because some poskim did, but for the most part they're in the minority, that there is great value, as we have found that over the ages, many, many saintly individuals and great Torah scholars went out of the way to visit the zoo. Ulami said, and we're going to talk a little bit about Tzar Bale Chaim later, but I'll mention over here, however, kozeb histaklus bavad b'masa yodav shel abar yisbarach. This means to go to the zoo and to see and to learn and to appreciate the variation, the complexity within the Bria. Of a chalilo leches lemekomo shemishtashim b'masa achzoriyo shel Bale Chaim v'agorm latbiya ba'adam midera umushcha shel achzoriyos mashchos nafshu yasena. However, God forbid to go to participate, even as an observer, in a place where animals are being used in a cruel way, in a cruel manner. So whether it's about bullfighting, and I don't know, alligator wrestling, and I don't know all these things like this. This is something which causes pain and suffering to the animals, and not only that, it instills with us midos ra'os, and for this we should absolutely stay away from. That is not a place for a Jew. We should be sensitive. This is not a place. But to go to the zoo and to see the animals and to observe how beautiful they are, absolutely. In fact, over here there's a reference to one of the tshuvos of Rav Chaim David HaLevi, who was the Sephardic chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. As you can see over here, he was Nifter in 1988, and he had many Svarim, including Shas Tshuvos HaSeilach HaRav. And over here he talks about whether it's permissible to have your own zoo. Is it permissible to go ahead and to take animals, birds, and put them in cages in order that you can enjoy them and other people come and learn about them? Or is this considered to be Tzar Bale Chaim, which we haven't yet completely defined? Is this considered to be a problem? And he goes on to say, consistent, he doesn't quote the Tshuva of Ravad Yosef, but consistent with that, with that reasoning, that it is certainly permissible to do so. There's great value in studying animals and observing animals. He does say, obviously, we have to make sure that if they are being caged, it has to be done in a way that is not known to be painful for them. And he says, I'm not even sure that it's necessarily so painful. Tzar Bale Chaim is a very subjective thing. We can't really talk to the animals. We can only sort of gauge their level of distress by what they share with us, so to speak. But, you know, an animal, some animals that are in the zoo and they have all their meals prepared and they're safe from predators, it's not necessarily the worst place to be. So the most important thing is that we should try to, again, always conduct ourselves in a way that displays, we haven't even gotten to this yet, but a special sensitivity towards animals. But for us to look at them and to observe them, to appreciate them, which is, again, what I'm trying to highlight right now, this is one of the great aspects of creation. There is something that I imagine many of you may be familiar with called Perek Shira. Perek Shira is a fascinating collection of psukim which are associated with many, many different types of animals, not only animals, other aspects of the Bria, the sun, the moon, planets, earth, the oceans. Perek Shira, which is attributed to the Tanoim, even though some explain that it's actually written by David HaMelech, some say Shlomo HaMelech, all different traditions, but it's a very, very ancient text, is very fascinating. It's extremely cryptic. It's very, very difficult to understand exactly what the psukim are saying. You would think that that if Chazal wanted to highlight the special, unique quality of a particular animal, then they would go ahead and pick a pasuk that names that animal, and that would be an appropriate pasuk to be said in reference to this animal. But Perek Shira doesn't work that way. More often than not, it's a code that really needs to be cracked, and actually there are Sfarim that have tried to explain exactly what's going on. Over here you see that Ber Yosef and Yosef Salant explained that, again, by learning, by studying, by reading Perek Shira, it gives us an appreciation for the incredible the brilliance, the the sheer majesty that we find within the Bria, within the creation. The Mabit says as well, the great skulos, whatever that means in reading Sefer Tehillim. The Maila is more so than reading Sefer Tehillim. And I happen to have a parish on Parak Shir, which I haven't studied. It's called Lechem Rav. And in the introduction, he has a little piece over there from Rav Chaim Kanievsky. And he says over there, he quotes from earlier Achonim as well, that we should know that Perek Shira, even though it says that these are the Shiros, meaning these are the words of song and praise that these animals express to Hashem, we shouldn't think that that means that the animal has Das. The animal doesn't have the intelligence to actually articulate, verbalize these Shirim. What it means, the concept that this is the Shira, is that the animals, by just living, by just being and the way they were created, they convey, they reflect a certain Shira, they speak, they praise. Again, not literally, but their existence speaks to the praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's how we are to understand this. So, for example, like the Pasuk at Tehillim, HaShemayim Misaprim Kavod Kel, doesn't mean that the sky talks to anybody, but its existence, the consistency that we find within nature and the course of that the nature follows, is one that gives us a very, very special ability to appreciate the Chachmas HaBoreh. I just want to add to this that we have, I believe, I don't think this is unique in modern times, but I think in our generation, it is something which has been developed much more. We have been able to see an incredible wealth of resources available to people who have various handicaps and special needs, elderly people, obviously people who are blind and people who have other disabilities, that animals have been able to be trained. In some cases, it's just natural. There's a very therapeutic value in connecting with certain types of animals. But certain animals have been trained for this purpose, and they have been able to bring tremendous, tremendous stability, safety, and in some cases, just sheer joy to people. This is the kind of thing that if you don't need it, if you've never needed it, if you don't know somebody who needs it, you may look from the outside in a little skeptically. A seeing eye dog, I don't think there are any skeptics among us. I think we could all understand and appreciate how that could be a lifeline for a person, unfortunately, who can't see. But if there's somebody who's going through a difficult time, if there's a person who's living by themselves, and they connect to animals, I mean, you can be grateful the fact that's not really something that you need. There's no need to go out of your way to develop that connection if you don't need it. But there's no question, this is something that I have seen personally on many occasions, that animals can really, really, really be for many, many people a lifeline, which can really make a significant difference in their physical health and in their mental health. And this is all part of the Bria. It's really, really an amazing thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has created animals that have the ability to be so naturally attuned to the emotions of people and vice versa, and they're able to enable people to achieve a greater sense of inner peace and calm than they otherwise would be able to. There's a person who once told me that he's a diabetic and his blood sugar level can drop suddenly when he's sleeping in the middle of the night. And at the time, he told me this several years ago, he did not yet have, and I don't know if it exists yet, the technology did not yet exist to be able to alert him as early as he needed to be alerted. So by the time, you know, some alarm would sound in the middle of the night, he already needed to address the situation immediately, or he would go into some sort of shock. So he has an animal, he has a dog, that wakes him up in the middle of the night when his numbers are starting to drop. How does the dog know this? I don't know. In fact, I think if I remember correctly, he told me he didn't get the dog for this purpose. It wasn't trained for this purpose, but the dog senses it has some ability. It's not a superpower. HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates animals with a certain sense of, and they can perceive things that we can't. And it alerts him. And it wakes him up in the middle of the night, and he does what he needs to do in order to take care of himself. This is amazing. This is absolutely amazing, and one that we should really, a fact that we should really appreciate. What about learning from animals? Well, what exactly does that mean? So says the Gemara in Erevin, Daf Kuf Amud Beis, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Imalei lo nitna Torah. Had the Torah not been given to us, hayinu lemeidin tznias mechatul, we would still been able to learn the concept of tznias from a cat. Well, what exactly does that mean? Most people, when you hear the word tznias, people think about that has to do with how you dress, right? We think about sleeve length. Well, it can't be because cats don't get dressed. But yet Chazal tell us you could learn about tznias from the chatul, because the way a cat relieves itself, it does so in a very, what we would say, a very modest manner. It's its nature. But Chazal are telling us that even had the Torah not given us instructions as to how to live a tsanua, a modest, refined life, we could learn it from a cat. V'gezel minimala, we would learn to work hard and not to take what isn't ours from an ant. V'arayos miyona, doves, who you could learn about it and read about it, who mate annually and maintain monogamous relationships. They are faithful. We could learn the concept of fidelity from a yona. Derech eretz mitarnagol shemefayos ve'achakach boel, a chicken who has certain mating habits as well, which seem to reflect a more refined, again, chickens, to my knowledge, they're not genuine emotions like human emotions, but they are conducting themselves in a way which reflects a certain feinkeit, the kind that we could learn if we were only looking and paying attention. This really is inspired by the pasuk of Mishlei. The pasuk says like this. Listen to what Shlomo HaMelech says: Lech el nemala atzel. He's speaking to an atzel, a lazy person. Go to the ant. Re'ei derachecha v'chacham. Look at the way it conducts itself, look at the way it acts, and you'll become wise. The Malbim says over there that kol kochos masabereshin stutum benefesh adam, that all of the kochos of man are again embedded within man. V'chokoach u'midos yimtzo adam b'minu b'min balichayim yodanu shechein nimtzo gam benafsho. If you see certain midos in animals, you should know that that exists within us as well. There are midos that animal has that they don't need to live. And with this, he quotes our Gemara, the Chazal, that tells us that the tznius from the chatul, the gezel from the ant, etc. Hanamali says, not to Hashem, but midas has rizos. God made ants, from our perspective, very hardworking. They move, they're constantly going and carrying and schlepping back and forth and back and forth, and they go online and they don't push the guy ahead of them. And if a person is ever thinking, you know, what's the value in being a czar is? I'm lazy and I just want to be lazy and I like being lazy. You think there's no value in zrizos in the world? You don't think you'll find zrizos inside of yourself? Go to the ant. The ant doesn't need it. It's there so you could see it. So Chazal say that we should learn from animals. We should pay close attention. Now, I'm not sure that they would recommend, and I'm not recommending, you should spend the rest of your life at a zoo and focusing so intensively on each and every animal to see exactly what you're going to get bored after a while, and you're probably going to be wasting your time. I don't think that that's what Chazal is telling us. But there are midos that we can discover within animals. Chazal didn't give us a complete list. They gave four examples. But the idea over here, there is a value in learning from animals. What about sensitivity towards animals? About being concerned about, I'll say, an animal's feelings. I'm using that again, very, very loosely. So here, of course, the pasuk that we say each and every day in Ashrei, Tov Hashem lakol v'racham al v'alkol ma'asav. The pasuk says that Hashem has rachamim, compassion, al kol ma'asav, on all of His creations, which include, of course, animals. The pasuk in Mishlei, look at this pasuk, Yodei tzadik nefesh behemto v'racham e'rishoy ma'achzari. I'm sure if you look at the Mefarshim, you'll find very interesting interpretations of what this pasuk means. But let's just translate it. Yodei tzadik nefesh behemto. A tzadik knows the nefesh of his behema. What does that mean? It means that there's a certain sensitivity, I'll say maybe a certain attunement that a tzadik has, that very, very aware of sensitivities in general, not only of people, which of course is first and foremost most important, but even behemto. There's a certain awareness. There's an awareness of what's going on inside of the animal. The Torah tells us, when Asati Esa b'sadachalavhem te'achav yachato v'savato, we read this every day in Kriya Shema. Hashem says, I'm going to reward you in Eretz Yisrael by giving you Esa b'sadachal. You're going to have grass in your fields so you can eat. But who's going to eat? Levhem te'achav v'yachato v'savato. First, your animals are going to eat, and then you're going to go ahead and eat. And based on this, the Gemara in Gittin tells us, you're not allowed to taste anything before you give food to your behema. Now, it's not 100% clear that this is accepted lahalacha. This is a big debate. The Rambam incorporates this in Hilchos Malach, in Hilchos Avadim, where he's talking about the way that a person should treat an Eved, and he mentions this as well, certainly as being a virtue. It's not clear that it's an actual halacha, but the Magen Avraham quotes it as being a halacha, And again, there are technicalities over here. When does it apply? Does it make a difference if I already fed my animal beforehand and he just wants scraps from the table? Does it apply only to food or to drink as well? So these are questions, but let's just appreciate it as a value without really getting stuck on the technical details of it. Also, you can't eat before you're feeding your animal. Why? Because it's a violation of cover, if you will, to that animal. The animal, it's insensitive to the animal. The Torah tells us you should not plow by placing a shor and a chamor together in the same plow. A shor is an ox, a chamor is a donkey. It would be an awkward fit, and that's part of the problem over here. You shouldn't be choresh your field with the shor and the chamor together. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, mitami ha-mitzvah zu inyin sar ba'lechayim. The idea over here is sar ba'lechayim shu asum ha-Torah. To do something which causes pointless—that's an important point over here—pointless pain to the animal, meaning there's no acceptable benefit either for a dvar mitzvah or some other important human need. Just to go ahead and do something which causes pain to an animal is usur min haTorah v'yadua sheyesh l'minei behemos la'ofos dagi gdola lishchorim she'enem minan. He says, you see that within the bria, animals don't like hanging out with different types of animals; they like being separate. We see that all the time, and over here the Torah is telling us that we should be sensitive to the fact that animals don't want to, you know, the ox doesn't want to be the donkey, and the donkey doesn't want to be the ox, so don't put them together. You can force them, but don't. And then, the Sefer HaChinuch says, the most important point of you all, he says, V'chochacham lev mizeh yikach musar. And when you pay attention to this mitzvah, you'll take musar. And you'll see that when it comes to people as well, people should be paired up appropriately. If I, let's say, run a business, I shouldn't put the Tzaddik with the Rasha, the Nikla with the Nichbad. We're not going to talk about what this may be, but the idea is you have to be sensitive and to put people together if they don't want to be together. And they're going to be annoyed and aggravated and pain and suffering being together. Don't do that. So the Sefer HaChinuch is reminding us that in addition to the fact that the Torah tells us we should be sensitive towards not being cruel to animals, part of that is so we can develop a greater sense of sensitivity towards other people. How foolish we would be to be sensitive towards animals and not towards other people. That would be absolutely foolish. The Torah tells in Parshas Emor, Veshor, Osev Yis Ben Olos Chatu B'Yom Echad, that there's an iser of shechting a mother animal and its offspring on the same day. Osev Yis Ben Olos Chatu B'Yom Echad. You can't go ahead and take the parent and child and shech them on the same day. Also, we understand as sort of being Tzav Lechayim. The Torah also tells us the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein, that when you come across a bird's nest and you want the Ephrochim and the Beitzim, you have to send away the mother bird. Shaleach to Shalach is Eim, as Abanim Tikach Lach. Says the Ramban over there, Gamzu Mitzvah of Eres, Men Oso Be'ez Beno. It's the same, these two mitzvahs are connected. Ki Atam Bishneim Levilte Yos Lanu Levach Zariv Lon Rachem. The Torah does not want us to have a cruel heart and to be completely disconnected to the pain and suffering of others, be the animals. And again, most importantly, human beings. And by the way, this is not just in a general sense, just be nice. This is even on a more, if you will, a dakistical level. Rav Hirsch explains that the reason why there's a mitzvah shaleach to shalach as aim, it's kedai to see it inside because it's part of a longer essay. Rav Hirsch says that the mother bird is going to protect her young until the last minute because that is her nature. Her nature is to protect her young. She's not going to want to leave them. She's not going to want to abandon them. And so therefore, says Rav Hirsch, send her away. Don't take advantage of that weakness and grab her for yourself. Unbelievable. In other words, the level of appreciation that we should have over here, so we can become better balei midos, not, again, the way we treat other animals. That's the floor. That's not the ceiling. Ultimately, to be mindful the way we treat other people, to really, really, really be sensitive on a very, very fine level. There's a Gemara about Metzia Daf Pehe, which tells us that Rebbe was one, there was a certain eagle, there was a little calf that was being taken out to be shechted, and it was crying at the last minute, and he put his head up against Rebbe's cloak, and he was crying. And Rebbe said, Zil, lekach notzai, to go! This is what you created for. And Amri, and they said, Rehov lo kam rachem, since Rebbe did not display papa rachemim, leso olav yisurin, he should suffer. And this, the Gemara used this to explain what Rebbe's suffering. Now, this is a very complicated Gemara. It's not a simple Gemara to understand because we know that we do shecht animals. And it is it is okay to shecht an animal. What does it mean the animal is crying over here? So I was actually debating whether to put this in at all, because it could lead us to mistaken conclusions. But I will just ask you to just take away, the very, very surface level message of this Gemara without probing too deep and then getting stuck on important questions that the Mefarshim will ask, and you should look. Another beautiful Ma'ar Makom, the Medrash in Shmos Rabbah, tells us that David HaMelech and Moshe Rabbeinu, not in that order, as well as others, were selected to be leaders of the Jewish people because of the way they treated their sheep when they were shepherds. And the Medrash over here highlights different things that both Moshe and David did in order to show special concern, the way they protected their sheep, the way they went out of their way to help the ones that were less advantaged, the one who was schlepping on the side and getting lost, and separating the strong ones from the weak ones. So Chazal look at this and they say, look at the midos that Moshe Rabbeinu had. Look at the midos that David HaMelech had. This is what made them roy for these great positions of leadership. So to say that, sensitivity towards animal doesn't matter, doesn't really make a difference, it's clearly not true. Because you see from Chazal that the importance of being sensitive to animals is very, very important. I will say that the Torah's view regarding animals is balanced and requires nuance. Because we know, and we shouldn't forget, some of us, maybe vegetarians, I am not. I enjoy a good piece of meat, be it chicken or steak, whatever the case may be. And I say that unapologetically. Maybe another time we could talk about being a vegetarian. We can do that for letter V. Okay, maybe. That would be a shiur in of itself. But the Torah permits us to derive benefit from animals. By shechting them, eating them, going horseback riding. This is a story from today. It's today's newspaper, Medical News Today. First successful pig-to-human heart transplant may offer new options for patients. Obviously, the story was first reported several weeks ago, but everybody's talking about it. What's our view about that? That's wonderful. I just saw recently quoted that maybe somebody had asked Rabbi Tendler years ago about using pigs for medical research. So he said that pigs weren't created for footballs. All right. So that's a little bit of Rabbi Tendler, Zichrono Livracha's witty humor, sense of humor. But that's not why Hashem made pigs. So we can go ahead and make footballs out of them. So obviously this is a tremendous thing. And as Torah observant Jews, we should view this very, very positively. Medical research, science research, this is all wonderful. On the other hand, hunting is something that we don't support. There's a famous tshuva, the Noda Behuda, who says that it's usur, and he gives several reasons, important reasons, some of which we mentioned tonight, and other ones as well. But just because we think that people are allowed to go ahead and to experiment for medical science using animals and to go ahead and to shecht animals to eat them, doesn't mean you're allowed to hunt them for sport. And other violent sports, be it bullfighting, other things like this, this is not something that we support. And then there's a lot of more nuance that's needed when it comes to a question, let's say, wearing furs. We can say, as many of the activists who have a very prominent, loud voice in the world today, that this is something that's despicable, that as people we shouldn't take animals and wear them. But we know that that we do that, right? We take the leather of animals and we make, say, for Torah tefillin and mezuzah, we wear the tefillin, right? A shofar comes from an animal. Now, again, these are not all the same, but to just go ahead and make simple blank statements, that we're opposed to something because, without appreciating the important balance and nuance that's necessary within, it doesn't do anybody, much good. And so therefore, we're not working through all these details tonight, but just understand and appreciate that the Torah's view regarding animals is balanced and requires nuance. One more, Ma'ar Makom, running out of time, so I'm probably just going to leave this for you without reading inside, but the Jewish Encyclopedia of Moral and Ethical Issues, a book that I've had for over 30 years, a fascinating book by Nachum Zell, who's, I believe, a former member of Teaneck, lives in Eretz Yisrael right now, wearing animal fur. So he has an interesting conversation over here. And he points out that there are other values that need to be considered as well. What sort of treatment, the animals suffered or didn't, when these furs were being taken. What is the reason I'm wearing fur? Is it because I like it? Is it because I want to show off my wealth? Is it because it's truly keeps me warmer than anything else? There are other considerations over here. And it's not simple yes or no. What about a bracha on animals? So what exactly does that mean? We're not talking about the bracha when you eat an animal. It says in Shulchan Aruch Chaim Rish Chav Hei Sif Ches Haroas Apil Vesakof. If a person sees an elephant or a monkey, there's a bracha yibek. Asher kedushanu. I'm sorry. Bracha Hashem Alkinim Al Cholam Mishane Habrios. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu created these really unusual animals within the natural world. There's a big discussion in the poskim as to whether this applies only to monkeys and elephants and how often you would make such a bracha. Is this once a day or once in 30 days or once in a lifetime? And whether other animals are included. So these are, you know, some of the many questions that are discussed. But to understand and appreciate, first of all, that there are certain animals that are really, really quite fascinating. And I'm not sure that everybody would necessarily agree that these are the most shinoi dika animals on planet Earth. It would be an interesting discussion to see as to why, either historically or maybe on a deeper level, what it is about the monkey and the elephant. I mean, they're both obviously unique in separate ways. Monkeys in particular, because of the fact that they bear many similarities to human beings, this is something which is truly fascinating. And for those who have spent any time in a zoo observing monkeys, not only chimpanzees or gorillas, but even small monkeys, spider monkeys, when you look at them close up and you see the way they move and the way they use their opposing thumbs, I mean, it's absolutely fascinating. And it makes sense that there could be people in this situation who have sort of this moment of religious inspiration. And Chazal tell us, go for it. There's a special bracha, a Mishana Habrios. Now, I know that there must be among us some pet owners, a lot of pet owners in the world, and I wanted to just present a very brief overview of some of the issues that come up when it comes to pets and halacha. The first one is Gidul Kalavim, which means raising or, let's say, owning dogs. There are conflicting statements in Chazal as to whether or not whether it's prohibited for a person to raise and to have dogs. In one case, the Gemara is specifically about a kelev ra, which we translate as a bad, evil dog. But the post can basically say that means a dog that barks and or bites, one or the other, both. It's not clear. But in other words, an aggressive dog, a scary dog, a dangerous dog. But then there's another Gemara which seems to indicate that all kalavim, at the very least, have to be chained. And so therefore, there are different attitudes that poskim have and have had for many, many generations. I think it's fair to say that historically, Jews have not been dog owners. And culturally, until very recently, it was considered to be very, very unacceptable for Jews to have dogs. That has changed, you know, quite dramatically, not necessarily in all communities, but in many communities, not only in the modern Orthodox community, slowly but surely into other communities as well. Of course, dogs have been bred over the course of time into all these new breeds that are, you know, some of them are, you know, on the antithesis of a kelev ra. I mean, dogs that are really very, very playful and calm and have very, just very delightful dispositions. But this is a question. It's a question that people should be aware of. We mentioned already the idea of feeding your animals first, but feeding animals in general is a question, both in terms of taking, let's say, edible food, food that I can eat, and giving that to animals. It's not such a simple thing. Can I go ahead and take bread? It's edible. It's not ruined. It's not spoiled. And break up little pieces and throw it outside to the birds? Not simple. You know, maybe that's a question about tashchis. Why is about tashchis? After all, the birds are going to eat it. Well, the birds are going to find their food one way or the other. But for you to go ahead and to take human food and degrade it in such a way by throwing it on the floor, it's at the very least, it's a question. Of course, when it comes to animal food, for pet owners, you need to be concerned about potentially deriving hanaf and basa b'chalav. Animals obviously don't have to keep the tayrig mitzvos, but we're not allowed to get hanaf benefit from milk and meat that has been cooked together. It's a question. According to the Rambam, basa b'chalav is the only problem if it's actual kosher meat. So therefore, if you're dealing with non-kosher meat or nevela, it wouldn't be subject to basa b'chalav. But we generally don't paskin like that, Rambam. So this is something that people need to be aware of. And also, obviously, when it comes to chametz and pesach, which I think a lot more people are aware of, we can't feed our animals chametz and pesach. Asirus, which involves the removal or the surgical sterilization of or the removal of the reproductive organs of an animal, is prohibited. The nature of the prohibition may be different between a male animal, a female animal, but it's prohibited. There is a machlokes as to whether or not that applies to non-Jews as well, meaning there may be a prohibition even on non-Jews, which means that for a Jew who owns a pet, who wants to then go ahead and have it neutered, fixed, whatever lashon you want to use, that is a very serious shaila. How it is dealt with, for those who have explored this question, so there are possibly different solutions. Maybe the best solution is all is don't do it. Don't do it. If you're going to get a pet, and it's otherwise permissible to do so, then, you know, better to have one that's already been fixed beforehand. But this is, again, this is a question that people should be aware of. When it comes to Shabbos, number one, there's a concept of Shvisas Behema. Not only must you rest on Shabbos, but your animals must as well. Now, again, animals are not L'chuyiv mitzvos. So this doesn't mean that the animal has to come to the Shabbos table and to say Kiddush and has to bench. That's not what it means. Shvisas Behema means that we are not permitted to go ahead and to work our animals on Shabbos. So obviously, in most settings today, people are not plowing with their ox, and so therefore it's not a very relevant question. I will tell you that I remember, and you think I'm making this up, except I couldn't make this up if I wanted to. I remember when I was growing up, there was a kid in the neighborhood who had a dog, and when they wanted to turn the TV on Shabbos, they would go ahead and put a little cake by the on-off button, and the dog would go ahead and lick the on-off switch, and the dog would turn on the TV, and then he'd go away. So there are obviously numerous problems potentially with that picture. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's a modern-day Shvisas Behema. The Poskim talk about having an animal carry, like a dog, for example, has like a collar around its neck. The collar's not there for the dog. It's there for me, right? I want people to know who the owner is. I want people to know that, you know, he had his rabies shot, whatever the case may be. So to carry that outside, it's the animal carrying something for me. This is a shaila. Muksa on Shabbos. Are you allowed? Animals menastama muksa. So what does that mean for pets? So this again is a debate. It's most poskim talk about this, say that animals are in fact muksa, even your pets. Now, muksa doesn't mean you can't have them in your home. It doesn't necessarily even mean you can't touch them, but to move them, certainly to pick them up, at the very least, and this is really all I'm saying right now, at the very least, it's a shaila. Hotza, if you are walking your dog, let's say, in an area where there's no Erev, what about holding the leash? These are questions. And a very serious shaila regarding Shabbos is to say that when it comes to trapping an animal, because, you know, that's one of the lamates melachos, is trapping animals. Again, usually when we think about trapping animals, okay, I'm going to go outside, trap an animal, I'm going to bring it to the schlachthaus and go ahead. But it's my pet. When trapping him, I'm putting him in the house so he doesn't get lost. I'm putting him in his cage so he can go to sleep. That may be true, but in the most technical sense, what you are doing is trapping it. And so therefore, this is something as well that needs to be discussed. People need to know the parameters. It may depend on the type of animal, the temperament of the animal, how obedient the animal is, where exactly it is that I'm putting the animal, whether I'm putting him in a cage or in a room in the house. These are all shailas that need to be explored. And you see, on Google, you find pictures of anything, even a picture of a dog with a talus. I'm not interested in talking about dogs wearing a talus, but what about a dog in a shul? Poskim discuss seeing eye dogs. I know that there are people who have therapy dogs that they bring to shul. This is something that the poskim already for several generations have debated, whether that's appropriate, whether that's acceptable. And there may be, you know, there may be differences between different types of cases. But these are some of the halachic questions that come up regarding pet ownership. So I thank you very much for joining me. This has hopefully been an interesting overview in animals from a Torah perspective. Next week, which actually is actually not next week, this is going to be 2 weeks because we're taking a break next week. So we will not be meeting next week, but 2 weeks from tonight, Be'ezus Hashem, pure and simple, an overview of the laws of Tum and Tara. I'm very excited about that. Probably for many of us, much less familiar than some of what we learned tonight, but hopefully it'll be a very, very useful exploration into the many, many different aspects of Tumah V'Tahara. Again, an overview. So anything and everything you always want to know about Tumah V'Tahara, 2 weeks from tonight. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful night.